It's Monday, December 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama and Congress ponder the next steps on gun control and terrorism.
We've seen conflicting reports about what may have happened.
The fate of the Taliban's leader remains uncertain. Also ahead, Thailand marks an anniversary amid concern. Good news concerning a former U.S. president. And a new note hits in music. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama's address on last week's deadly shootings in California comes as two potent and divisive issues merge and overlap: international terrorism and gun control. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me in the studio. Mike, from the halls of Congress to the presidential campaign trail and even the Oval Office, the coming week will see many recommendations on what America must do to keep its citizens safe.
What this has illuminated is that the political parties essentially talk across each other and at cross purposes on this issue. From my perch at the Senate in recent days, what I have seen is Democrats saying we absolutely need to keep firearms out of the wrong hands. And what you hear from Republicans is we absolutely need to go and destroy the Islamic State. So the same incident, but very different reactions depending on the political party.
The Republicans take more of a pro-gun stance, following the Second Amendment pretty closely, which says that Americans have the right to bear arms. This goes all the way back to the founding of the country. And a lot of gun opponents think that that is just an outdated part of our Constitution and needs to be changed.
Well, the Constitution is eternal, one would think. But there have been serious debates for many years about what exactly the Second Amendment means. It says that the right of the people to bear arms, being part of a well-regulated militia, will not be infringed. So whether that clause is the defining characteristic of it, or whether you should simply read it as the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed, that is a debate that we are not going to resolve in this studio at the Voice of America.
It may not be resolved in our lifetime.
Here we are. President Obama is about to speak. I vividly recall what President Obama said after the Newtown, Connecticut shootings. I have to say, as someone who watched the gun control debate in Congress after Newtown, and there was a Senate bill to at least strengthen background checks for people, no one's guns were going to be taken away, but going forward, the idea was to strengthen background checks. That went nowhere after the slaughter of more than 20 little kids. And having witnessed that, I thought, it's simply not going to happen. Gun control just isn't going to happen.
President Obama, of course, has come out, as you mentioned, in that incident and all the others, and made comments about them. This is the first time that he's gone on the air in, quote, a primetime speech to specifically address an issue that has happened and talk about it in the broader sense. As far as what he can actually do, it's probably pretty limited. He needs the help of Congress.
He does need the help of Congress, although in President Obama's second term, we have seen many instances, including on immigration reform, where the president has said that, look, Congress isn't acting. I need to do whatever I can as an executive through executive action. I have no idea what President Obama is going to propose or if he's going to announce anything at all. But if the last few years are any sort of indication, and certainly we've seen the level of frustration from the president grow and grow and grow with each and every mass shooting that we've witnessed, I have to believe that if there's anything that the attorney general has said, well, Mr. President, this is something you can do on your own, that is something that is at least under consideration. Whether anything is announced tonight, I have no idea. But I find it hard to believe that this president, who has spoken out so forcefully and with such passion after Newtown, after San Bernardino, after all these different incidents, I find it hard to believe that some sort of executive plan isn't at least getting looked at.
Tackling all of the issues and very well is our own Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Mike, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Jim.
We'll stay with VOA as in a short time at 1 hour UTC, President Barack Obama will address the nation about the latest shooting incident in California and about the broader issue of terrorism. We will bring you that speech live. Again, it's at 1 hour Universal Time right here on the Voice of America. It's time now for us to check out what's trending online. And as always, our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, is right here. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What do you have for us today?
Well, it's almost that time of the year when the Time magazine picks a person of the year, and the magazine's Twitter handle sent out a number of tweets asking people about their choices for the person of the year. One of them reads like this: Malala Yousafzai versus Pope Francis. Who should be person of the year? Hashtag Time POY. To that tweet, one person replied it should be a woman this year, and another person wrote the Pope should be the POY. Time sent out similar tweets throughout the day today, including Tim Cook versus Mark Zuckerberg. Who should be Time's Person of the Year? That's, of course, referring to CEOs of Apple and Facebook, respectively. And other comparisons are American pop slash country singer Taylor Swift versus Britain's Adele.
All huge personalities. So tell us what the Person of the Year actually means.
Sure, the magazine has been naming its Person of the Year for 9 decades now, and it's for someone who had the most influence in the world that year, be positive or negative. And it's not always a famous person or a specific person either. So one year it was President Barack Obama, as you know, and another year it was Adolf Hitler, and back in 1951 it was the American soldier. Time's editors make the choice, but in recent years, thanks to the internet, the magazine began asking for readers' opinions as well.
Well, that's interesting. How does that work?
So Time partners with a company called Pinion, and what they do is conducting audience responses online. So readers can vote on Facebook, Twitter, and Time.com, but they have to use hashtag TimePOY for their votes to be counted on social media and on Time.com. Their votes can be tallied on what's called the Voting Hub. The Reader's Polls ends Sunday at midnight Eastern Standard Time, and the winner will be announced Tuesday.
But the Reader's Choice is not quite the same as the Time Person of the Year, is it?
Exactly. So the Editor's Choice will be announced Thursday by Time's Managing Editor Nancy Gibbs on TV, also on its Twitter feed and Facebook page. And before I go, I want to say that other candidates for a 2015 POY include India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, Ferguson protesters, and Ebola doctors and nurses. Jim?
Well, our choice for social media guru of the year is G. Abby Lee. She's on our International Edition team, and she'd love to hear from our listeners as well. You can tweet all about your feedback to our Twitter account at VOA underscore IE or to G's account at G. Abby Lee or even mine. I'm at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar at voanews.com and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The United States continues to monitor conflicting reports about the fate of Taliban leader Mullah Akhtar Mansour, but is skeptical a clear picture will emerge soon. Ayaz Gul reports from Islamabad. The U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan made remarks Sunday in Kabul.
After days of widespread reports that Taliban leader Mullah Akhtar Mansour had been seriously wounded in a gunfight with rival militant commanders, the Islamist insurgency released a voice message from its chief to prove he is alive. Speaking in Kabul, U.S. Special Envoy for Afghanistan and Pakistan, Richard Olson, said he was not in a position to comment on the authenticity of the recorded message.
We've seen conflicting reports about what may have happened, and we're going to continue to monitor the situation. We're actually somewhat skeptical that we will have a great deal of clarity in the near term.
In the message released Saturday, Mansoor rejected reports of his death in a shootout in neighboring Pakistan and of rifts within the Taliban as propaganda from the Afghan government and its intelligence agency. Olson reiterated Washington's call for seeking a negotiated peaceful settlement to the Afghan conflict.
We believe that stability in Afghanistan and the region requires an end to violence. We believe an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned peace process is the surest way to ensure lasting stability in Afghanistan.
Afghan government and Taliban officials held a single round of groundbreaking peace talks in early July. But the process was quickly suspended after it was revealed that longtime Taliban leader Mullah Omar had died 2 years ago. Omar's deputy, Mansoor, was swiftly made the new chief of the insurgency, but he has faced opposition from a group of key Taliban commanders who formed a splinter faction. There have also been reports of deadly clashes between the two groups in recent weeks, though the mainstream Taliban has downplayed internal rifts as routine disagreements. While Afghan security forces may militarily benefit from internal rivalries in the Taliban, critics fear it will pose greater challenges for internationally backed peace efforts. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Thailand has celebrated National Day and also the birthday of its king with tributes and ceremonies. But as Ron Corbin reports for VOA, even as Thailand marked the occasions, there are concerns over the 88-year-old monarch's health.
Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha led National Day celebrations amid thousands of people at the Sanam Luang Park, paying tribute to Thailand's revered and respected monarch, Bhumibol Adulyadej. The evening event, highlighted by candlelights and fireworks, came at the end of a day of official celebrations. Throughout Thailand, celebrations varied from the giving of alms to Buddhist monks to local ceremonies marked by officials and communities. Absent this year was the king's nationwide address, amid increasing concerns of his fragile health, as he marked his 88th year, 65 years as monarch, the world's longest reigning monarch. Carl Thayer, a political scientist from Australia's University of New South Wales, says Bhumibol has played a crucial role in unifying Thailand.
He's kept the monarchy respected. They've looked after casualties from the anti-communist period, tried to bring reconciliation in the south that hasn't quite been successful. But he has been such a dominant figure of unity in Thailand that under the present circumstances, whoever his successor will have a major, major task to try to get the prestige of the king and have the monarchy still be seen as a unifying force in Thailand.
But concerns over Bhumibol's health have risen in recent weeks after he appeared frail during his most recent appearance before the general public on September 1. Debate over the monarchy has been increasingly suppressed by Thai governments, both the elected and military government that came to power last year, on the application of Thailand's rigid lèse majesté laws that outlaw defaming the monarchy, with many now facing lengthy prison sentences. In recent months, the Thai military has used the laws as part of investigations of people, including former members of the royal house, as well as military and police officials. Royalists this week staged protests after U.S. Ambassador Glyn Davies, speaking to foreign reporters, criticised the unprecedented lengthy prison sentences imposed under the law. In recent days, the local publisher of the international edition of the New York Times refused to print articles about the Crown Property Bureau, which manages the financial affairs of the royal family. Earlier, the same publisher deleted a story from the front page focused on Thailand's weak economy and the outlook under the military. The story had briefly mentioned the royal family. But despite the concerns over Bhumibol's health, little public discussion has occurred on the monarchy after his reign. Bhumibol's only son, 63-year-old Crown Prince Maha Vacharalongkorn, is the heir apparent to the throne. Public efforts by the government are being made to promote the Crown Prince, who is often seen as distant from the Thai people. Analysts say Vacharalongkorn faces significant challenges to match the strong moral authority his father has been able to establish over six decades of his reign. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
For months after announcing he was battling cancer, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter told members of his church in Plains, Georgia, there were no signs of the life-threatening disease. The former president told a crowd of several hundred that medical tests conducted this week did not show signs of the melanoma he was diagnosed with earlier this year. During an August news conference, Carter explained after removing a lesion on part of his liver, doctors had also discovered four small cancerous lesions on his brain. Radiation treatment soon followed, as well as a course of drug treatments to help boost his immune system to help fight off the cancer in his body. After being diagnosed with cancer, Carter had promised to scale back his busy schedule as the head of the Carter Center, but has showed few signs of slowing down. He has regularly taught Sunday school lessons at his church in his hometown of Plains for most weeks since the announcement, and along with his wife, Rosalind, they recently participated in a Habitat for Humanity home-building effort in Memphis, Tennessee. Carter, who turned 91 in October, holds the record for the longest post-White House career of any U.S. president. Well, speaking of records, British pop singer Adele is now breaking new records as her latest album, 25, reaches her fans and hits the music charts. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins me in the studio with details.
Hello, it's me.
Adele just debuted at number one on next week's Billboard Top 200 Pop Albums chart after selling 3.38 million first-week copies of 25. And that's a historic figure. It's the biggest total in the history of Nielsen SoundScan. That's the point-of-purchase sales tracking system, started way back in 1991. And this is also significant because Adele didn't allow streaming of 25. These are direct sales and downloads. And she's also poised for a million-selling second week, which would also make chart history, because that hasn't happened in the 24-year history of SoundScan.
Well, we've talked a lot about Taylor Swift being very shrewd in the business end of music, and it appears that Adele is following in those footsteps.
Adele is very shrewd because she went away for a while. She lay low. She didn't overexpose herself on social media. She made us want her back. And this is how the public is responding. But, you know, there's a price for everything. And in Adele's case, that price is taxes. Because just this week, the British government hit her with a £4 million tax bill for 2014. That works out to about $6 million U.S. dollars. Now, Adele didn't really do anything in 2014. She was home, you know, writing and recording 25, raising her little boy, laying low. But she still gets that huge tax bill because of royalties from the sales of 21, which came out in 2011 and dominated the year's markets. And she also had big success in 2012 with the James Bond theme Skyfall. Now, Adele's estimated net worth is about £50 million, or about $75 million. So it's not like she's going to be penniless because of this tax bill. But if she wants to raise a few extra pounds, she can always hit the road. And that's what's going to happen. She's going to kick off her world tour on February 29th, 2016 in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Right now we have the UK and European tour dates, but we're going to have to wait a little longer to see when she hits North America.
The fact that Adele hasn't streamed this effort, do you see this as perhaps becoming a template for other artists?
Well, of course, Taylor Swift led the charge last year with her 1989 album, and she wanted to bring attention to royalty payments, to how small they seemed in these streaming services, and she definitely put that on the table. Streaming is still relatively new. The royalty structure is evolving. Adele can get away with it because she sells so many albums the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. Other artists, it's not so easy for them. Streaming is the wave of the future, it seems, and they have to play the game.
We play the game each and every week with Ray McDonald, who is your Top 20 Countdown host. Find him on Twitter at
Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much for stopping by, Ray.
Thanks, Jim.
Hello. How are you? It's so typical.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us always at voanews.com. We're also on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Don't forget, at 1 hour Universal Time, we will carry the President's Address to the Nation live. I hope you can join us. Our engineer is Daryl Smith, director Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Balkan nation of Montenegro has been formally invited to begin the accession process of joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. The most recent additions to the 28-member alliance were Croatia and Albania in 2009. NATO's open door policy has helped spread security, stability, and democratic values for which the alliance stands, said NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Since 2009, NATO and Montenegro have worked closely together through the Membership Action Plan, which helps nations prepare for possible future membership. Secretary General Stoltenberg said Montenegro was invited to join NATO due to its unwavering commitment to our common values and to international security. Secretary General Stoltenberg said it was important for Montenegro to continue on its reform path, on defense adaptation, on domestic reform, especially rule of law, and to continue to make progress in demonstrating public support for Montenegro's NATO membership. The alliance will continue to monitor progress in these areas as accession talks begin and during the treaty ratification process. Montenegro's foreign minister, Igor Luksic, said he was committed to fighting organized crime and corruption, as well as modernizing the country's military. We are determined to work tirelessly, not to please others, but to change our society for the better, he said. Accession talks will start in early 2016. Once they are concluded, alliance members will sign an accession protocol, which will have to be ratified by all 28 member states. Once that process is complete, Montenegro will be able to become a member of NATO. The United States supports Montenegro's accession into NATO. As U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said, "We took another step towards the full integration of Europe and towards the common defense by inviting Montenegro into the alliance and solidifying its place in the Euro-Atlantic community of security and of values, and by reaffirming also the open-door policy of NATO." The United States looks forward to working with Montenegro's leadership in the months ahead.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.